Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the We're Not Experts History podcast with myself, Sarah and James. Hello, James.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, and it's your turn today. So what have you got for us?
I imagine our listener has listened for, oh, Sarah's introducing it, means James is doing it. I'll continue listening.
So, yeah, they probably turn it off when they hear your voice start, but anyway.
So that's what I expect, or they might just, as soon as they hear my voice, turn it off anyway.
Probably.
Anyway, this one today is a mystery one I've got for you.
Okay.
Life
probably
is full
something
of mysteries.
Grim, knowing you.
Yeah. So life's full of mysteries. So who was Jack the Ripper? Or why is Mrs. Brown's Boys listed as a comedy on the BBC iPlayer? It's just mysteries we'll never understand. And this one goes back to the 1940s.
Okay.
So we go back to Worcestershire, and on the 18th of April 1943, there was a discovery was made in some woodlands called Hagley Wood, which is
gross.
Near Whitbury Hill in Worcestershire.
Okay.
The poor local boys were out in venturing. I think I can't remember what they were doing. I don't think they were poaching, but they managed to go onto private land where they shouldn't have been.
Right.
One of these boys saw a bird. I think they were after bird's eggs now, and they saw a bird coming out of this tree. So he's climbed up, had a look, and what he's seen was skeletal human remains in this
hollow
trunk.
I knew it was going to be something grim. Okay.
A large witch elm, yeah. So this lad, Thomas Willits, he's climbed a tree, peered in, seen the skull, and the boys hesitated. So they've run home knowing full well if they say, well, we saw it in this area, we're going to get into trouble because we shouldn't have been in there. But eventually, when the next day, they've started saying, telling their parents what they found.
Yeah.
So, it was reported to local police, and the local police constable, William Williams. Sure, that's right. And the more I look at that, that doesn't sound like I'll put the right name down. But basically, William Williams was dispatched to the scene, and he confirmed what they'd found. Skeletal remains in a witch elm. And the remains were
skeletal human remains, I'm assuming.
Human remains. Oh, yeah, human remains. And they were
probably
gently
did say
removed.
That, Matt.
I said skeletal remains. I might have not done. After all that, it turns out it was someone's cat. At the end. No, there was human remains found in this tree, and they're gently removed from what is quite a confined space. So it was a bit of a task, I imagine, to get this stuff out, especially in its advanced stage of decomposition.
Oh.
And the entrance was quite narrow as well, so that's got to be quite difficult, I would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so you then got this pathologist, a fellow called Dr. James Webster, who was a Home Office expert, and he led the initial forensic examination. And his initial finding found that the victim was a female. She was aged around 35 to 40. She was only about 5 feet tall, so she was only little. But they found a piece of taffeta fabric in her mouth, which they thought suggested that she'd been gagged.
Mm.
But I would have said, she's that decomposed. How can you tell that? That could have been put in there at any time. But then how would it get in there is the question. But what I also found was her right hand was missing and appears to have been severed at the wrist.
Hmm.
Yeah, which seems odd.
Mm.
And they also found a silver wedding ring.
Right.
On one of the wedding things. So
someone's missing a wife.
Married as well. Yeah. Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Webster estimated her time of death to be around 18 months prior to being found, which places her death between 1941, late 41, and early 1942. And bear in mind, this is April 1943. And so, yeah.
She's been there a while.
She's been there a while. Mm. These forensic details immediately, it just indicates foul play.
Yeah.
Which escalates the case into a full-scale murder inquiry. And yeah. Highlights how macabre this actual concealment was. It's baffling, this one. I've heard about this a few times, and there was a podcast about it done, which will be better than this one.
Probably.
By the BBC. Oh, my, it definitely,
definitely
is.
Definitely will be if it's by the BBC.
In fact, I would say if you're listening to this now, turn this off and go and find the one on the BBC.
Stop
I can't actually
chasing away
called.
Our audience. But let them listen and make their own mind up.
They want to learn. They want to do it. Even I would go back to that one and rather listen to this. Anyway, we shall go on to this poor victim, this unidentified woman.
Hmm.
There was, despite the very detailed forensic examination that was carried out, the identity of the woman proved to be a very annoying, difficult challenge for investigators.
Mm.
She had quite distinctive dental work. Specifically, she had a crooked lower tooth and a missing upper tooth.
Okay.
And I suppose by studying the skull, they can tell whether that tooth was pulled out, it came out while she was alive, or if it was done post-mortem.
Mm.
I don't actually know. I will say now, I'm not a pathologist.
No.
I've never carried out a legal autopsy.
Grim.
There were obviously the details of these of her teeth were widely circulated in an appeal to try and identify, but there was no matching missing persons reports came back that mentioned these teeth. So that straight away, that's one avenue gone.
Yeah.
We're still in the Second World War as well.
I was going to say, this is right in the middle of the war pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
yeah, 1943, yeah. So that complicates your traditional policing methods as well. Mm. I would also imagine you might find that there are officers of a certain age who are probably very, very good, but they've been called up or they've joined up.
Yeah.
So there's mass excavations, conscription, and the constant excavations.
Did you mean evacuations? Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. What were they excavating?
Evacuations
makes more sense.
Yeah, I feel I really should go and find out the name for that BBC podcast now, because
I think you just tipped them over the edge. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Enjoy that podcast. We can just talk about anything like now.
Yeah.
England game was quite good the other night.
Was it?
Not that you watched it. Yeah. Anyway.
I wouldn't even
so,
know.
So yes.
I've got tacos for tea.
Sorry?
You said we can talk about anything light, so I just said I've got tacos for tea or dinner, whatever you call it.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm just going to be thinking about those while you're talking. But anyway.
And that's why. So I would suggest anyone who is still listening, just think about tacos rather than this. So,
yeah.
But again, it was obviously Second World War. You've got mass evacuations, conscription, and obviously you do have that constant movement of populations for war work. And also found recently you'd have like the bigger cities at night, people would go and sleep on the outskirts as well, so rather than be in the middle of the city where you got the bombing. So I haven't looked at a map to see where this is, to see if that might have been a possibility that she would have moved out of a night or something.
Mm.
But it did mean that individuals could just disappear without being immediately noticed.
Yeah.
Or their absence might be misattributed to wartime events.
Yeah,
then
I think they've been evacuated or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She went to London. I assume she's been killed sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, your police resources were also stretched thin, with many experienced officers, as I said, serving with the armed forces or diverted to wartime duties, like air raid precautions and enforcing the blackout regulations. So, again, your investigative capacity is greatly reduced.
Yeah.
But the mystery, this mystery, which is why I like it, I think people would love a mystery. I think it's
rather than a straight up body in a tree.
I think people do like a mystery. It's just something that enthralls you. It's something you could look at with the possibility that you might solve it or something like that. But this one took a bit of a turn about a year and a half after the body was found.
Mm.
So we get to the winter of 1944, and some mysterious graffiti began to appear across the Midlands,
most famously, the message was marked in white chalk on a wall in a place called Upper Dean Street in Birmingham.
Right.
And later it appeared on a monument in Hagley itself.
What did it say?
And it was, so it said, "Who put Bella in the witch elm?"
Oh.
So straight away, it's put a name to it.
Yeah.
When the police haven't. So why were this marked the first public association of the name Bella with this unidentified woman?
Yeah.
So it's straight away that, well, where's the name Bella come from? But no one knows who put the messages up, where it came from, and no one ever claimed responsibility for it.
Okay.
But the appearance profoundly. It really influenced the case, and it solidifies the mystery to, I suppose, everyone outside the police, and which is why we're still talking about it today. And it does also suggest that someone held information about this woman's identity or the circumstances surrounding her death.
Yeah, because, I mean... I don't know, but I can't imagine they would have made, or maybe they did, but made that public knowledge that they found her stuffed into a tree, or would they have made that public knowledge? I don't know. Surely they would have just.
I think it would have probably appeared in local newspapers.
What that?
But I think this had been found. The body had been found.
Right.
I do wonder why Bella? Why choose the name Bella? I wouldn't have said it was that. It's not that common a name now. Was it that common then?
I haven't found many Bellas on family history searches, I must say.
I don't think I've
found one, to be honest.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, then again, it could just be a nickname for Isabel or Isabella.
Yes, that's true.
Or Annabelle, yeah.
It sounds more like a posh name, actually.
Yeah, or foreign.
Yeah.
We had a lot of people escaping Europe to come over here, so the reason she wasn't... or known as, she might have just not been from the UK.
And I suppose their forensics then wouldn't have allowed them to know that. Nowadays, they can find a skeleton that's 1,000 years old and extract part of the tooth, and they can say exactly where that person grew up.
Where it came from, yeah.
But obviously then they wouldn't have been able to do that. So,
no.
Yeah.
No, even in the 40s, I don't think DNA had been discovered yet. Discovered in the 50s, I think.
Right.
But the initial police investigation into the Hagley Wood murder, as we should call it, was led by a superintendent called Walter Williams, another Williams, which makes me wonder if that's where I've got William Williams PC from. But he was a member of Worcestershire Constabulary.
Okay.
And he led a very extensive investigation. And his detectives checked missing persons records nationwide and went through them with a fine-tooth comb. And they focused on disappearances which would match Bella's forensic profile from late 41 to early 42. So you're looking for a female, late 30s, maybe early 40s, only 5 foot, missing tooth. And they conducted a lot of local inquiries, quite widespread. They interviewed residents, landowners, anyone familiar with Hagley Wood or the surrounding area, and specifically to seek any unusual activity or unknown individuals that might have been witnessed. But these searches, they didn't bring anything up that matched Bella, as what I'm calling, even though matched the victim.
Yeah, because we don't know that her name was actually Bella.
No. So they carried on without a name or a starting point for a murder inquiry. So all they've got is the body. They've got nothing else.
Mm.
And if you look at the context of wartime Britain, it presents very, very difficult obstacles to this investigation. So you've got, the severe strain on police forces, their resources and personnel diverted. This stretched capacity limited how thorough and how quick the murder inquiry could be carried out. So you've also got the social upheaval of war, meaning that, again, some people were simply vanished without official record, making the tracking of missing people, I don't even know how you do it then. And now, obviously, we can follow your phone, we can see when you've got money out, then yeah. I've got no idea. There was
must have been much easier to disappear in those days if you wanted to.
Yeah, if you wanted to. And I listened to a podcast, I can't think it was, when they spoke to a woman who worked in a factory somewhere during the Second World War, and her best friend was a Scottish woman who one day just disappeared. Never saw her again, could never track her. And it just shows how easy it was. If she didn't want to be there, she'd just disappear, jump on a train somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, just call yourself a different name.
Yeah. Yeah, just go and live wherever you want.
Yeah.
But back to the murder. These theories explored by the police at the time included the victim being involved in local illicit activities like prostitution within Birmingham's wartime black market or a local tragedy. However, interviews within those communities didn't generate any concrete leads again or help with confirming her identification. I think that's...
Nobody knows who this person is. I mean, assuming that the ring was genuine, this is somebody's wife, you know, someone's potentially missing a partner. Potentially. It's odd. But anyway.
But you've also got this persistent appearance like a year later of the Bella graffiti, which adds another layer of mystery to this enigma.
Yeah.
Despite it being a potential clue, the anonymous nature of it makes it difficult for the police to carry out any actions on it. So we might have a name, but because we don't know who put it there, we can't follow it up.
Yeah.
So you bear it in mind. You can't use it as a lead, really,
because
you could be wasting your time. So, but there were appeals went out for the artist to come forward, and nobody ever came. So the authorities are left to grapple with whether it was a genuine insight or just someone's idea of a joke to taunt, or say it could be a taunt from the killer. But I'm not convinced by that. So years pass without any breakthrough, without a victim's identity. There's no solid motive, no suspect. The official police investigation gradually turns into a cold case. And the unusual nature of a body hidden in a tree ensured the case remained a topic of local and eventually national intrigue. But for law enforcement, it was just a frustrating reminder of an unsolved murder, which sort of cements its place in British true crime folklore, which is why I'm talking about it now and why it's been on a far superior podcast on the BBC.
I've never heard of it, but continue.
I think I'd read about it years ago and then it cropped up on that podcast.
You've read about everything. Everything that ever happened, you've read about it. But anyway.
The amount of rubbish I've read about over the years is it worries me.
Worries me.
Because I don't remember a lot of it. I remember little bits and pieces, but I don't remember all that much. So you only have part of the story. So anyway, the police the public, the newspapers came up with theories about this. And one of the most sensational and probably widely discussed one suggests that the unidentified woman in the Witch Elm was a German spy. And they've also put a name to her of Clara. Why do I do this to myself? Clara.
I bet you can't pronounce it. Give it a go. I won't know if you're right, so.
Bowel. That's Bauer. B-A-U-E-R-L-E, Bowel.
I wouldn't know.
Bowel. This hypothesis sort of picked up traction, especially in post-war period, fueled by the atmosphere of wartime paranoia. As well as the strange circumstances behind the discovery. And people who've suggested this theory suggested that Clara was a German cabaret singer and actress, and she'd been covertly dispatched into the country as an enemy agent, and her mission might have involved espionage relating to the vital industrial heartlands, which is the West Midlands.
Right.
Or she might have been part of an intelligence network preparing for a potential German invasion. No, by 1941.
I was going to say, it's a bit late, isn't it?
Less likely. Yeah. I think this is... People love a conspiracy theory, and I think this is one of those.
Yeah.
Let's go for the most outlandish thing we can think of. But the primary source for this Clara Bowell, Clara theory comes from a quite interesting, though unverified, account. So in 1945, there's an MI5 agent, apparently named Margaret Murray, who shares a name with an anthropologist, apparently, but they're different people.
Okay.
And this person allegedly informs Professor McAllister of Birmingham University that Clara was indeed a German spy. And according to this tale, Clara was parachuted into the West Midlands to connect with an espionage ring. Don't think that's the one she was wearing on her finger.
Probably
the theory
not.
Goes that her death might have been the result of a double cross by her own network or termination by another agent for a failed mission or she became a liability, with her bodies then hastily concealed in this tree just to dispose of the evidence. But the verifiable evidence from official intelligence records supporting Murray's claims, or there being this Clara presence in the UK as a spy, has never been established by authorities. There's no proof to back that up.
So it was just a...
There's been other attempts to try and back this story up, but they've never come up with anything. So while a German cabaret performer named Clara, whatever her surname was, did exist, German records show that she died in Berlin in 1942, apparently during an Allied bombing raid. So we
kind of contradicts itself.
I would say it wasn't her, and that probably backs it up, even though the Germans might have falsified it, so we didn't know if she was a spy. But no, I don't think so. And this official account does directly contradict the timeline. So some people argue that her reported death might have been fabricated story by the Germans. I don't think it is. The persistent lack of any corroborating official British intelligence records that would show that she'd entered the country, because they were very, very good like that. The amount of German spies that were picked up very quickly, because we either knew they were coming or they just weren't very good. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's the notion, this notion of a spy in a tree appeals to some. I'm not convinced. It's the one thing that springs to my mind is if you've just bumped someone off, you've just bumped your fellow spy off, what's the likelihood of stumbling across a hollow tree? Oh, I've got a body in there. It does make me think that whoever's done it knew about the tree.
Yeah. That it was kind of more carefully planned, perhaps, or it's someone local that knows the area.
Yeah, but then we also have to bear in mind that the boys found it by through luck as well.
That's true.
Yeah. Next theory, I think you'll like this next one. So, away from conventional criminal explanations, another story comes up about Bella in the Witch Elm mystery. It's linked to witchcraft. Or occult practices, anyway.
Oh,
so this
okay.
suggests that
different.
This hypothesis really comes from a specific gruesome detail of the discovery, which is the victim's missing right hand. So, for those of us, not me at all, who are versed in folklore and your occult traditions, a severed hand suggests ritualistic significance. Apparently.
I never knew that.
Yeah, no, I didn't. So apparently it evokes the ancient and sinister concept of the Hand of Glory.
Uh-oh.
Which I've never heard of.
Really?
Yeah, the Hand of Glory. Now, I've heard of Hand of God, and that's cheating.
So I can't remember the exact story and where it came from, but it basically it means... It's like to do with thieves. So the Hand of Glory was apparently the hand of a thief or something. And in Harry Potter, there's a Hand of Glory. It's mentioned, and it probably comes from this story. Yeah. But if somebody's holding the hand of glory in a dark place, it will light the way for them, but not anyone else, or something. I don't know. I need to go research that, because I can't remember the exact story. But it's something to do with thieves, the hand of glory.
Well, I wonder if that's because obviously there's certain nations who will remove a hand if you're caught.
Yes, that's probably where that comes from.
Possibly. So, but anyway, this grim artifact, which is usually described as being dried, like a dried pickled hand of a hanged criminal, was believed in European folklore to possess magical powers, specifically to paralyze sleepers when lit. I don't know whether the hand's lit or they're lit. But it enables thieves to commit their crimes undisturbed.
Right. I knew it was something like that. I was getting like the Harry Potter one mixed up with the real one. Not that it's real, but I think it's more of a myth. It's like a magical thing, isn't it? It's not.
Yeah. If I'm looking for detail and I'm hoping for facts, I'm not looking at Harry Potter.
Why not?
In fact, I can't think of any reason to look at Harry Potter.
We're not even going to get into this now, because I'll end up falling out with you and the podcast will end. So carry on before you insult Harry Potter some more.
Yeah. Right. So this idea, this hand, is obviously this quite macabre item combined with the body being hidden in a witch elm, which is a tree apparently associated with folklore. And is considered to possess mystical properties. I've no idea what they are. And it led some to speculate that Bella, as we're now calling her, was a victim of a ritualistic killing rather than a conventional murder. So
yeah.
I would say either way, it's murder. I don't think it's going into court.
And I guess they can tell that the hand has been chopped off and that she just wasn't born without a hand. I imagine they'd be able to tell, wouldn't they?
Yeah. How clean it is, or that it's been sawn through or something like that. They should be able to tell, yeah. But one of the most notable proponents of this witchcraft theory was, again, Margaret Murray.
Margaret Murray again. Her and her theories.
She's a controversial. She's an anthropologist, but she's a quite influential one. But she's also quite controversial. She's also a folklorist. So in the 1950s, Murray was known for these theories of pervasive European witch cults.
Sorry, can I just backtrack? Because I'm confused. So the first theory about saying that she was a spy came from a Margaret Murray, but an MI5 agent, not the anthropologist. Are we talking about two different Margaret Murrays? And then the next theory comes from the other Margaret Murray.
I think it's the other Margaret Murray.
Right. Okay. That's why I was confused. Okay.
Yeah.
So all the Margaret Murrays in the world getting involved with this case.
Two of them get involved.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, it's confusing enough, a mystery as it is, but now this.
Now we've got all these Margarets and Williams is knocking about. It's just like, I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
I don't know where I am now.
Yeah, sorry. I'll shut up.
I'm absolutely baffled as to what's going on. But so we get to the 1950s and she's known for the theories on a pervasive European witch cult. And she publicly suggests that Bella's death bore these hallmarks, which are consistent with a black magic ritual.
Okay.
And yet her academic intervention, although not officially endorsed by the police, funnily enough, then a veneer, should we say, of scholarly credibility to what was otherwise speculative.
Mm.
And it captured public imagination. I think it is yet another aspect that's added to this that just reminds people of the murder.
Yeah.
But this, you've got this, it just further embeds this mystical and occult storyline within the Bella narrative. And this other Margaret Murray, this one who's not MI5, her publications and her commentary ensured that this witchcraft angle become an unproven but an enduring facet of the case. And it sort of adding this cult speculation, the estimated timing of her death, Bella's death, late 41 to early 42, it took place during a period when some rural areas of Britain still harboured remnants of folk magic beliefs, apparently. Even if formal witchcraft wasn't openly practiced.
No.
Were people still going around? I think we need to find someone to sacrifice, and we need to remove their right hand and leave them in a tree somewhere.
Sounds a bit far-fetched when you put it like that.
I don't
there's a war on. You'd think people would have better things to do and other things to occupy their time right now, because we're in the middle of a world war.
I think I seem to remember again reading a story about the chief witch or white witch or wicker witch or whatever they were at the time of Britain had cast a spell on Hitler.
Right.
So, yeah, I'd have to research that one. I can't remember the full details, but I think there were still people who thought, we could do something here with our witchcraft. Yeah. Not convinced. Now, there was amongst all this, there was local rumours also circulating about potential Romany connections, given the historical associations of Romany communities with mysticism. Though, again, not credible, no credible evidence was ever found that any such group committed the murder. And it's strange because I think they're just trying to find something a little bit more interesting, I suppose, to explain the missing hand. I don't know whether the hand was chopped off or not. I'm going to assume it was, but the fact that it's not about, it might have been taken by an animal or just decomposed. And I don't know. They've gone over, combed the area thoroughly, you think they would have found more bones, which I would have thought. Boxes or something, I've got it.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah. So we also then had another theory amongst many of the numerous theories.
And your theories? Anyway.
These are not mine. I didn't come up with these theories. These are just ones I found.
All right. You and your found theories.
Yeah, me and my found theories. I should need to stop reading up on things. These would be a lot shorter. So this one is one of the most... the more detailed and probably slightly more grounded, which appeared around about 10 years after Bella's body was found. So it's 1953. There's a woman named Una Mossop, whose maiden name was Haynes. Neither Margaret or Marley, I'm pleased to say. And she came forward and claimed that her ex-husband, a fellow called Jack Mossop, had confessed to her, given her crucial information about the body in the witch elm.
Is that why he was her ex? Because he told her that.
Why would you leave it so late unless he only just told her? Interesting. But this was the first time any individual had been directly linked to the disposal of the body. So it offered a significant new lead in a case that was 10 years old. So according to Una Mossop, in her testimony, Jack, who was a local man, had revealed that he and a mysterious Dutchman were responsible for placing the woman's body in the tree.
Right.
And again, obviously, the Dutchman may have been serving over here. He might have been Jewish and he'd escaped the mainland. But Una's account suggested that the incident occurred during a night of heavy drinking, and which was took place in a pub in Hagley around late 1941, early 1942. That fits in. And it aligns with the estimated time of death. Jack, who died in a mental hospital before Una made this confession, reportedly described how he and his associate, identified only as a Dutchman named Van Rout, so two words, Van and Rout, RAULTE, they were involved with the woman. And Una says that her version of events suggests that the woman passed out during due to excessive alcohol consumption, and in the panic or misguided attempt to either teach her a lesson or conceal her activities, Jack and Van Rout allegedly decided to hide her in the hollow tree on Witchbury Hill Estate, expecting her to wake up later and simply be scared. Yeah, I believe that.
That's quite an extreme thing to do to a drunk friend.
Yeah, I don't believe that. Yeah, I think if there might be a chance then this is real, and what they've actually done is they've killed her and they're now trying to explain it away. Well, no,
I was going to say, yeah, she was alive. Yeah, she was alive when we left her.
Yeah. So it was Una's testimony. She implies that neither Jack nor Van Rout intended for her to die. And the suggestion was that she suffocated while trapped in this confined space or died from exposure after being left there in an unconscious state. And then her hand fell off.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. I'm always dropping my hands. This discovery of this piece of taffeta in a victim's mouth by the pathologists could be seen to align with this story, potentially if they'd used it as a gag, or it become lodged there accidentally during the sort of concealment. So while they're pushing it in any clothing or anything, it's getting caught in a tree, lifted up, and then falling into her mouth.
Still doesn't explain the hand.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, the hand, it remained unexplained detail in the story. Now, the police rigorously investigated Una Mossop's story, and they tried to trace this mysterious Van Rout, but he, funny enough, another one completely vanished without trace, and there's no verifiable records of his full identity or whereabouts ever being found. So without his testimony and with Jack Mossop dead, Una's story, very interesting, but remains uncorroborated by direct evidence. And critics have pointed to the significant time lapse between the alleged event and her confession, along with a few inconsistencies in the story as potential weaknesses. So I think I might have to be one of those critics. I'm not convinced by that one.
No, it doesn't make sense to me.
Now I might give you some more theories if you're lucky.
No thanks, I'm hungry.
In that case, well, I'll drag some more out. So beyond the spy and the witchcraft and the Mossop theories, there are a few other less detailed stories which have been considered over the decades since this happened. These include the possibility of a local murder stemming from a crime of passion, or that the victim was part of Birmingham's wartime underworld, perhaps a sex worker whose disappearance might have gone unreported by associates. But without any confirmed identity for the victim, the lines of inquiry surrounding these, there's nothing you can do. There's just no concrete leads. As for forensic science, it's advanced, obviously, quite a lot, we say, since the 1940s. Obviously, there's hope for solving long-standing cold cases like Bella's have been rekindled. And then you've got the advent of DNA profiling in the 80s, in this country, I'm very proud to say. And that was pioneered by a fellow called Alec Jeffries, who revolutionised the criminal investigations with DNA around the world. And this technology allows for the identification of individuals from tiny, tiny biological samples. As you were saying, they can take it from thousands of years old. And that's a really powerful tool for examining old evidence. So in recent years, both the true crime enthusiasts and some law enforcement bodies have discussed the possibility of exhuming Bella's remains to attempt DNA extraction. And if viable DNA could be obtained, it might lead to a positive ID through the familial DNA databases or just direct matches with living relatives, finally actually putting a name to this victim. The only problem is I don't actually know where she's buried, if she's buried. I'm assuming the fact that they really want to do this means they know where her body is, but I'd have to look this one up. It's obviously going to be an unmarked grave.
Yeah, because at what point would they kind of say, right, we're not going to figure this out. Let's just lay them to rest rather than leave them in like a locker in a police where it, I don't know, wherever they keep murder victims. I don't know.
Yeah. The other thing that concerns me, because the amount of times you hear about evidence from old cases being locked away somewhere and disappearing. That happens quite a lot. Actually, as they change their filing, what's the word I'm looking for? The way they do their filing
system,
you might find things go missing or they're relabeled. Yeah, their filing system, yeah, or it's relabeled incorrectly or something. Obviously, yeah, not sure. But then, if Bella was foreign, as suggested by the spy theory or Dutchman account, they could use that isotope analysis you were talking about to see where
she actually was from.
Geographical origins were, yeah. And obviously, we've now got advanced computer modelling which could be able to
reconstruct the face.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous how good it is now. The stuff that they could never have dreamed of in the 1940s.
You can literally look at the face of somebody that you shouldn't be looking at because they lived thousands and thousands of years before you were born. Like, you shouldn't be able to see what they look like. Say that again.
What they should be able to do is scan a living person, 3D print their skull, and then get the computer to do it, and then see how accurate it is.
They've probably done that, I would have thought. Because I'm sure they would have experimented to see how efficient this was. I would have thought.
Yeah, I'd hope so. I've just never seen anything of it. But I also know that they can use DNA to tell what your eye colour was and hair colour and all sorts of bits and pieces about the features. So they, how expensive and how time consuming that is, I don't know. I imagine it's not a 5-minute job.
No.
So we'll move on from that. So that's all your theories. I won't give you any more theories.
No, don't. That's enough theories to be going along with.
Yeah, so what's that, 80 years ago, over 80 years since the discovery. But this mystery of who put Bella in the Witch Elm, it still interests people today. And I think also this perplexing, or the perplexity of it happening in wartime Britain as well adds another layer of mystery.
Yes.
As I say, people love a mystery, so this is something that he's going to endure and people are going to talk about and try to solve. But the fact that it is unsolved is another a layer of interest to people, as well as we don't know who it was.
No.
But without that identity, the police completely deprived of that crucial starting point.
Yeah.
So, they would... If they knew it was, they knew where she come from, why she was there, then they'd be able to work out who she knew, who she associated with. But without that information, just gone up nowhere.
No.
It's a fascinating one. And as I say, it's that fascinating. The BBC have turned out.
Fascinating and sad that somebody could just disappear. Yeah. They could find somebody that's disappeared from... And is apparently not missed by anybody.
No, that which does suggest they were either not local to the area or not local to the country.
I would think that they weren't local Obviously, so nowadays you've got internet and things, haven't you? So whereas back then, I guess if you wasn't local or you wasn't of this country, then. And you have got family back in wherever you've come from, how they would have no way of knowing what happened to you, which is, quite sad. But
So that's the mystery of who put Bella in a witch elm.
Ah, well, that was interesting. Grim.
Yeah, I like that one.
You always like, see, we can rely on you for the grim, serious topics and me for the random, obscure things that don't make any sense. That's like my kind of speciality. Things like the great stink.
You like to talk about
random
scatological subjects.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But then it's, I like all sorts of bits and pieces that fascinate me. Mysteries and spectacular events, which is another one I'll have to work on. But yeah, there you go. That's the mystery of Hagleywood. Who put Bella in the Witch Elm?
Oh, well, thank you very much. And thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And just remember, we're not experts. We're just two amateurs muddling through history.